Oh, so good. It just feels Christmassy, doesn't it? Like glitter everywhere, trees. I mean, even God's in agreement. Like the snow yesterday wasn't that horrible, awful get-in-a-car-wreck snow. It was the float down from heaven and just easily sit on the porch but melt before I have to shovel. This morning, I woke up first, and we finally put up our Christmas tree. Woke up, the lights on the Christmas tree are glimmering. Made my cup of coffee, started a fire in the fireplace, which sounds a lot more elegant than it is. I just flip a switch. And I sat there for about 45 minutes, and it was just amazing. It was heavenly. See, that's the narrative. There's always a narrative. There's always a story we tell. And then there's the counter-narrative, the alternative story, the parts that we hint at and the parts that we leave out. It's really, really easy to be literate and illiterate at the same time, to know the story, to hear how the narrative goes, but to miss huge parts of it. See, the part I didn't tell you is the reason I was up first is because my dog was puking by the side of my bed. All of a sudden, the glamour's gone, isn't there? You know, I didn't tell you about the fear of pushing the coffee button because I knew both of my girls were asleep, and if they woke up, it would be horrible. So often what we see in this is this narrative that we know the nutcracker, but we have no clue what's going on. Anybody else with me on that? Good, we got some honest people. It's like, wow, that was pretty, that was beautiful. Susan's, man, the artistry and the strength in them, that was amazing. But what just happened? So I called my friend Sarah Knapp to come up front. Sarah basically ran this show. Is that fair to say? Step up so everybody can see it. So this is Sarah Knapp. By the way, this is also, you'll hear sermons on this later. Sarah is the, what's your official job? And do it into the mic so everybody can hear you. Like, at Studio, what's your title?
I'm one of the faculty teachers at Studio 149.
Okay, so she's one of the faculty teachers at the studio. And you got to go really close, otherwise it gives this weird feedback. Sam will do a great job to make sure it doesn't happen. But so Sarah, by the way, this isn't my wife, those of you that don't know, because I said that a few weeks ago. Sarah is one of the other faculty there. She did this. So you know how to read this. You like know what just happened.
Yes.
So bring me up to speed.
Okay, so what Susan just played was the Harlequin doll. And basically...
Sorry, what's Harlequin mean? Oh, okay. Sorry, I don't know either.
It's just her name.
A fancy doll.
Yes. So basically, Clara receives her as a gift in the beginning of the Nutcracker. And then she dances and leads Clara and the Nutcracker through the land of sweets.
Okay. I can almost guarantee that if we watched that entire thing in context, we'd get a totally different meaning from it now that we know that little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when you see it, if in the whole show, there's a bunch of little ones, right?
Yes, so she leads out a bunch of little baby dolls that all of the party girls, who are Clara's friends, receive as a gift. But Clara, as the special one, gets the big doll as her gift.
Okay, can you come up, because we're going to end it with the dance too. Can you come up and explain the next one before it happens?
Absolutely.
Awesome, thank you, Sarah.
You're
welcome. Give it up for Sarah. It's fascinating to me how once I know that little bit of the story, it changes the entire narrative. Before, I thought the little ones that came out were just for the aw cute factor. And I've seen this about a dozen times. As I sat there this morning, fireplace roaring, watching the snow glisten on the pond, I read this. This is so good. If you can pop it up there. This is our gospel reading for this morning, but I love it. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was the governor of Syria, and everybody went to their own town to register. So Joseph went up to the town of Nazareth in Galilee, to Judea, to Bethlehem, to the town of David, because he belonged to the house in the lineage of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married with him, and she was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for a baby to be born. And she gave birth to her firstborn son, and she wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and she placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. It's another one of those things I've heard about a gazillion times. If I'm completely honest, when I hear that text read, I hear Charlie Brown's voice. Are you with me? It's one of those that we've heard so many times, we've seen so many times, that we know the narrative, but we don't know how to read the story. It's easy to know the narrative, but not read the story. Just listen to the words. In those days, Caesar Augustus. Now remember, this is written to a bunch of Jews, to a bunch of people living in their land, but Caesar Augustus is not a Jewish name. See, when they heard this story, they heard we're under the thumb of an empire. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree. That's a decree when the person in charge has power, they say jump and you say how high. Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. That is, the place where you're living is not your land. That belongs to me. I'm the Roman Empire and I want to count how much property that I have. Man, this is worse than waking up to a dog vomiting by the side of your bed. It took something glamorous and these happy memories, and it has nothing to do with a nice snowy story. It has to do with systems of oppression and dehumanizing people. So what happens when we own that part of the story? What happens when we don't just listen to the narrative, but we listen to the counter-narrative as well? See, one of the key themes of the Christmas story is Jesus wasn't born into perfection, into glitter, into snowfall. Jesus was born into an oppressive system. A system where his own birth narrative said, you are a number on a page of something that belongs to somebody. I'm taking inventory, and we're not even really sure if you count. See, one of the reasons we ignore that part of the narrative, by the way, is because sometimes that hits a little bit close to home. Man, what do I count for? What am I good enough for? If I wasn't this, would I still matter to the story? I'm amazed this time of the year people come up to me and they always say, hey, Pastor, are you busy? And my response is, no, not really. See, what I learned a long time ago, I mean, if I'm completely honest, people are like, how's the Christmas sermon coming? That was written 6 months ago. I always try to finish Easter right before Christmas. Or right before Thanksgiving. Because this is what I've learned. I've learned that when Thanksgiving hits, that time between Thanksgiving and Christmas, I block out for counseling. Because this is the time where everybody starts questioning, not everybody, where a lot of people are hit in the gut. They thought that by Christmas time it would all be better. They see that this gift is being bought for this person. And they see the price tag on that gift and they go, ooh, I'm not here. I thought I could measure up to here and I'm not there yet. Since I'm not here, do I even really count? Would I be one of those tallies on Caesar's checkmark? That's when shame sets in. I'm amazed how many people They're looking at the new daytimer that came out. They're looking at the goals for next year, and they feel that sinking feeling in their gut because they remember last year when they set those resolutions. And they see just how much they didn't measure up. It's more broken now than it was even last year. I thought the relationship would be better, but it's more tense. And I don't know where to go. Well, it came to pass that Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. See, in these very first chapters of Luke, it's calling into question an amazing, it's raising an amazing question. What counts? What counts? Why do I matter? To talk about that, we got to talk about kingdoms. See, when Jesus was born, he was called Jesus because he is the king, the Emmanuel, the God with us, the one that runs and tells the whole story. There's a storyline being driven, the Caesar story, that says you are only as good as what you measure up to. If your dress is fancier than the dress that you wore to last year's Christmas party, then you're good enough, and if it isn't, So that's the story of Caesar. And then there's a story of another kingdom, another narrative, one that says your worth is not defined by how much money you make, how many points you put on the scoreboard, how great your relationships are. It's defined by a God who picks you, who loves you, who even when the whole world is falling apart and you don't know how you're going to string it together again, even when you're at the end of your rope, that God looks at you and says, I'm with you. I've entered into this. I left heaven and dwelt among you. And it may not be as sparkly of a story, but it's a better story. It's a story that brings life and hope. And what I learned, I'll have Sarah tell you because you won't believe me. You'll think I'm just making this up. Sarah, can you come up? I had no clue. You all know this. You've heard the term sugar plum fairy, right? No? Okay, it's that and the creepy rat thing. What's that called?
The Rat King.
Oh, the Rat King. I was really close. The sugar plum fairy plays this essential role in the story. Everybody knows it because it's that little, how's it go?
So everyone, I think, has heard this song because it's in all of the stores during Christmas time, on all of the commercials. So the sugar
plum. Who is she?
So the sugar plum fairy is actually the queen of the land of sweets. So the land of sweets is where Clara and the Nutcracker go when they dream. So she's kind of the queen of the whole land. And then, so she dances at the very end of the Nutcracker. And then after her dance, she brings all of the dancers together for one big final bow and goodbye to Clara and the Nutcracker before they drift back off to sleep.
So good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, and here's why it's so good. You can't miss this. We live in a kingdom where we thought it was this way, where she thought she'd just drift off to sleep, and we're given a different narrative, a sweeter narrative, a narrative of candies and cakes and good things to come, because that's the way the monarch wants it. That we're given hopes and dreams for a future. See, whenever you hear that Sugar Plum Fairy song, remember that God has so many hopes for you, so many dreams for you, that God became man and died on a cross so that you can be called into a better future, not only here on this earth, but for eternity with him. With that as the guiding metaphor, we invite the Sugar Plum Fairy to the stage today.